Welcome, everybody.
Woohoo! We are on to season 5 of Adventures in Being Gifted.
We're back.
Here we go with, this is our 3rd year doing this podcast, and we couldn't be more excited to be starting back up after a little brief pause because of life.
Life, for sure. Kids going to college for the first time ever, coaching.
Yes.
And our schedule has changed big time this year at school, so we've been adjusting to that. Learning how to teach a different grade level and incorporate all of the things we normally do in the same amount of time every single day. So it's been an adjustment. So we're doing our season a little backwards, everybody. Instead of starting in August for 10 episodes or so, we are starting at the end of October, and we're going to go into 9, 10 episodes or what have you into the new year, and then right back into our next season. So it'll be right back to back. It'll be a lot of fun. We've got some incredible guests coming up covering some of the topics like equity,
critical thinking,
visual spatial intelligence.
We have some parenting advice from a wonderful podcast that we love to follow.
Yes, great information there. And then we have several student stories that are just incredible, what kids are doing in the real gifted world, just telling us about their lives as gifted kids.
And if there's any other subjects we haven't mentioned that you would love to hear with us here on our podcast, please let us know. You can email us at adventuresinbeinggifted@gmail.com. You can DM us on Instagram or X, formerly Twitter.
Whatever you call it. And let us know. We want to know what you want to hear about. What are the hot topics that you are grappling with, or you're discussing with your friends, your colleagues, your parent friends, maybe your spouse or your partner? Just let us know. We would love to cover those topics and dive into them.
And for this episode we have for you today, we have recorded a wonderful experience that we just had at the Ohio Association of Gifted Children Conference. And we are going to be speaking with presenters and teachers and experts in the field of gifted here for this first episode.
So listen in. These are going to be monologues along with some shortened interviews. And it's just a little bit of a plethora of different people that we were able to grab who spoke at OAGC last week. And it was just incredible. We have a lot of great topics. Again, hitting up things like critical thinking. How can you have an equitable identification on standardized tests? Goal setting.
ChatGPT, a little bit of AI information that we got to sit in a session for, and just cultivating giftedness.
Yeah. Great stuff.
So here we go.
My name is Katie Pearson, and I am a gifted supervisor. I work at Montgomery County Educational Service Center in Dayton. And I have been there for 5 years. Prior to that, I was a first grade teacher, and I always had gifted students in my class, and I loved learning about them, teaching them to be lifelong learners, and just really motivating them. Today at OAGC, I spoke about strength-based goal setting, really started talking about the purpose of our written education plans for our gifted students and how that is the documentation of service and really a communication tool to parents. And then we just went into really as people, it's important to know what our strengths are. And as teachers, to really hone in on what our strengths are to help our students realize what their strengths are and how we can make the biggest impact on them by growing their area of strength. And really that is the purpose of the language in the implementation standards in Ohio, is to really grow in the area of strength for our students. We know that success builds success. And so then when we can grow our students into confident, lifelong learners, focus on that positive environment and having these conversations with kids, just so they know how they can grow to be the best person that they can be. It lets them to feel empowered. It strengthens our relationships with them and just builds a culture of community within our classroom. We also know having these conversations with kids, it's talking about where they are now, but also where they want to go. And their strengths are their pathways to that. If you wanted to start small, if you were a teacher, just starting with the assessments, looking at choice for them, but also kind of maybe guiding them to the area of their strength. If they're a very creative student, maybe offering them different creative choices to show what they know would be an easy first step for students. And then for teachers also, and parents, I do believe, being intentional and really taking the time to look at the feedback that we give our kids, and that it's really important to look at the effort over the final product, because we know for students who have early success in school that later it gets harder and they don't always know how to handle that. So if we can really focus on the hard work and the effort when the students are faced with challenges, it really opens up the growth mindset for our students and allows them to know that they can grow and change and that they're not stagnant, and that really the effort is a prerequisite for that growth and development. So in the classroom, looking at strength-based class, just looking at strengths-based goals can help motivate and empower. We know that for students, as they get older, underachievement becomes an issue, but working on strengths and being positive is also a way to combat that. And it also leads to social emotional awareness for kids so that they are able to verbalize what they know and how they can grow.
Hi, I'm Kathy Frazier, attending the Ohio Association for Gifted Children Conference. And I believe that creativity does not have to be sacrificed to meet content standards. And that's what I'm here to promote with teachers. And I also, it's my passion to integrate resources, research, strategies into teachers' content so that they're knowledgeable about creativity and they can start promoting creativity in their classrooms. So I have gotten my certification from what is called the Creative Circle, and it's connected with Fable Vision. And this is probably, I did it during COVID. Okay. It was probably, I think, 60 to 100 hours of working through their steps and modules, and it focused on how to integrate creative thinking into your classroom. And so if you Google Creative Circle and Fable Vision, you will meet Sarah, who's in charge of the program, and it's $75 for the whole program.
And wow.
Yeah, for part of it, you do it with your student. They have a book that they give you. Okay. And there's K-3, 6, and high school. So any level works. I did it with one of my students named Rebecca, and she wanted to write a book. So we worked through brainstorming ideas, coming up with a plan, and then implementing the plan.
And how old is Rebecca? What grade?
And Rebecca is in 10th grade.
Okay.
Yes. So I connected her with a mentor who was a children's author and illustrator.
Wow.
And during COVID, we met on Tuesday nights, and Rebecca shared her ideas with the illustrator. So the book was just amazing when we had it done and completed.
That's exciting.
You can get, like, become a certified creative teacher through that program. The other one was, and it was about 15 years ago at OAGC, I heard about the Program for Creativity and Change Leadership at Buffalo State. And I was like, wow, I wish you really could do that, you know? But at that time, you had to go to Buffalo State. So during COVID, they decided they would open it up. And they opened it up internationally. So I was like, okay, this is my chance. And it's going to be a lot of work, but should I do it? And then I decided to take the risk and do it. And the professors are absolutely amazing. And the people that you have in a cohort, you move through the classes. We just became a family. Mm-hmm. And I learned so much from people who weren't teachers because they were event planners and business people and environmentalists. But as part of the program, I met three teachers who will be my lifelong friends now.
Wow.
Last year, we went to Buffalo State because we wanted to meet our professors in person.
Aww.
And we went to what's called the CIPSE conference, which is on creativity at Buffalo State in June. And then we just had some fun because one of the girls was from Australia. So we took her to Niagara Falls. We went to New York City, and we plan on doing projects together.
Wow. You talk about like building relationships. Yeah. That is the ultimate educational relationship that was built in that that setting.
Definitely. So I wanted to talk about one thing I learned. I thought I knew really a lot about creativity because I am a co-author for the Future Problem Solving Program, and I write the teacher activity units each year. And if you don't know about future problem solving, I'm going to talk about it in a minute. But one thing I learned that was interesting is that there are two ways to integrate creativity in your classroom. One is by teaching creatively. And that's like, as a creative teacher, you're using your imagination to bring your lessons to life and engage the students. And you might use music, or you might role-playing, involving the kids in a simulation or gamification. And so the kids are having fun. And it's playfulness, but a lot of learning, too. The other was teaching for creativity, and I didn't realize the distinction. I think I was always a teacher who taught creatively until I found the Future Problem Solving Program at OAGC, and I walked out of there going, wow, what did I just learn? And from that point on, I saw how amazing it was to teach for creativity. And research on the Economic Forum presents that the skills that are needed for future careers are problem solving, creativity, collaboration, those four C's, communication skills. So was something that I was going to really be determined to integrate into all my lessons. And in teaching for creativity, you're teaching creative thinking skills, such as brainstorming, forced association. There's hundreds of them that I learned during my program. And then those support the creative problem-solving process, which in a nutshell, you're doing research on an issue, you're identifying challenges, you're writing an underlying problem, and then you're basing solutions on that underlying problem statement. You're developing criteria and evaluating the solutions so that you can come up with the best one and write an action plan. So Ohio has a future problem solving program. And since COVID, it's been really small, but we have two amazing leaders who are trying to build it up again. And if anyone's interested in it, there are one competition is groups of four. Ooh. Who do the problem-solving process based on four different issues, such as rising sea oceans, global warming. They do different ones like social issues, environmental issues.
And what grade levels?
And this is fourth grade through 12th grade.
Okay.
And it's really, they give the kids a future scene, and then the kids go through the problem-solving process and come up with an action plan.
Love it, because that also helps tie into goal setting. So just understanding those, correlations, that's great.
Definitely. And yes. The one that I love the best, Well, there's one called scenario writing where the kids write a 1,500 word future scenario based on an issue that's current. But the one I love the best is community problem solving. I'm actually Ohio's director for community problem solving. But coming back from COVID, we don't have that many teams that are participating
so
in
how
that.
How would our listeners find out about just Google future problem solving?
Ohio future problem solving.
Okay.
And then there's the state bowl. And if you are a winner at the state bowl, you go on to represent your project at the International Future Problem Solving Bowl. And for me, service learning is the highest level of teaching for creativity. The kids select a problem that is meaningful to them, and then they go through the problem-solving process and come up with an action plan and implement it. And an example is what my students did last year. They felt that there was not enough creative writing at the high school. They came up from the elementary school or the middle school doing Power of the Pen, and they loved it. And so here they are at the high school, and they're writing essays, and they felt like they didn't have any opportunities for creative writing. So our plan, after we went through the steps of the problem-solving process, was to create a writing center. And one thing that's really sad is a lot of times, you know, kids have these ideas and the first thing they think of is, wow, it's not going to work. We don't have enough money, you know? So with what we wanted to do, to design an entire room and have it at the high school to create a community for kids that love to write. And, you know, we started out, okay, how are we going to design this room? And the ideas were amazing. We have twinkle lights going around and a couch and high tables and a big place where we can display kids' writing. And to put our action plan, that's where the kids learn so much that they're going to encounter obstacles in the future when they want to do things.
But because they went through those steps and overcame those obstacles of the money or the space, they now see the success of it. I'm sure that's just going to motivate them to tackle the next big problem.
Yeah. And we ended up, you know, we got a grant from the Orange Foundation the PTA, and that solved our problems. Then we just needed a room, and rooms are at a premium at our high school. And the principals, he gave us a room. The kids made a presentation.
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah. The kids made a presentation, and he really liked their ideas. And so in the back of the media center, he took away a computer lab and gave us a room. Nice. And our writing center is just amazing. Now we have a writing club. We have peer tutors in there if kids need help. We do, one of our goals was to do our own competition. So we did one called Fairy Tale Remix, and we teamed with the thespians who were doing Into the Woods. And so we did it for the whole school system.
Yeah.
And at the elementary school was my most fun because we took the kids' ideas. Whoever won, we wrote their idea, their story into a play.
Oh my
and
gosh.
Then we dressed up and went down and presented it at the elementary school.
So that was you and the high schoolers?
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Did somebody film that? That's awesome.
Yeah, actually, we have a lot of pictures, but we should have had some. That's a good idea.
Do that next year, this year.
And when you're doing service learning, that's really an important thing. Take all your pictures along the way.
Well, I also believe it's important to take those high schoolers that are at the top of, you know, the chain, so to speak, in your school system and reach down at the lower levels so that they are reaching those little kids.
And they're role models.
Oh, and they're all interacting. It's just amazing.
Yes.
Leadership ladder right there.
So it was Little Red Riding Hood, the detective, that won. So they had to pick a different genre.
Oh, my goodness.
So that's now, awesome. Yeah, we're having a publication now. We've brought in authors to speak to different classes and stuff. So
I think that your next year's session when you speak at OAGC should be about this.
I've done it. I've done sessions at both here and NAGC.
I think this is remarkable.
And we have an article in Teaching for High Potential about service learning. My friend Jean Metzger and I, it's our passion. So anyway, in closing, I think that I would say that there's no end to what kids can achieve when they're doing service learning. And
100%.
It easily, if you look at the whole picture, it easily integrates into your curriculum. And
it's meaningful to those kids.
You know, the kids that I'm friends with on Facebook that have done service learning, they write things about how they remember that so much. Yep. And, you know, that.
Oh, absolutely.
And the parents say, what did you do? My kid's like volunteering for this and traveling to Dubai and stuff to help out.
It motivates them. It totally takes them on a trajectory that essentially changes their life.
So I would say creativity does not have to be sacrificed through service, creativity does not have to be sacrificed to meet your content standards. And service learning is an awesome way to teach for creativity.
We agree. Bravo. Yes.
Woo! All right. Thank you, Kathy. We are here with Lauren Webb from Lakota Local Schools in Westchester, Ohio. And we just want to hear a little bit about why you are here and why you come to the OAGC conference every year.
Hi, everybody. It is so awesome to be here. I love the setup. This is amazing.
Thanks.
And the tech end that has to go into this, too. And I was even thinking about the executive functioning aspects of how you guys get all your equipment here and remembering all the pieces. That in and of itself is gifted, right? So I love coming to OAGC because I always walk away with something new or some new idea or even new connections. The last 2 years, I've been able to participate in Parent Day. This year was really cool because it was spatial research and then how you put that into play at home.
Yes.
And then that obviously has implications for at school as well. But I was so proud because my kid is actually the one who showed.
She was amazing.
She rocked it. Thank you.
Oh my gosh.
That poor thing. She has to go to all my gifted events. So she's just used to this. So it was like a one take, you know, show us what you play with at home, like what I make you do all the time.
She's ready for college. Yeah. She could be a teacher like today.
Yeah. She definitely has that bossiness that shows up. But I
Not
think that's my fault.
Leadership.
That's right. Leadership. She's definite leader.
I like replacing that word. That's a better way to frame it for sure.
She was awesome.
Thank
Very
you.
Well done.
I just personally hope that more parents get involved and at the legislative level, even an understanding how gifted is funded in Ohio, but even nationally, and how we have a group of students who have different needs and that we need to be able to meet those needs, even using MTSS processes. So really leaning into what tier one, what every gifted kid is getting in our classrooms, and then what above that do we need to provide for them? And I don't think that the answer is static and it's the same for every child. And that's where really having the gifted intervention specialist be able to speak to those pieces and provide those interventions is key. And I don't think that we think about gifted students in the same way that we do our other students or students that have different needs. Mm-hmm. And if we can get into that mindset that, you know, some gifted students really do need tier three interventions, I think that that will help us with funding and help us with what that programming should be for those students and what those interventions need to look like. We have really prescribed interventions for students with disabilities, but what are those prescribed interventions that need to exist for our students that are tier two or tier three gifted students? What do they need to really be challenged so that we don't have that underachievement or that unhealthy behaviors that we see as they get older? Anxiety presents more often. You know, how can we get in front of that and really support our students earlier on so that we have really happy, healthy adults that are contributing and making this country even better than it is.
100%.
I don't think we could agree more.
Exactly. Yes. And it's really cool for gen ed teachers who are here to gain literal ideas that they can turn around tomorrow and implement in their classrooms. They can even purchase affordable subscriptions or resources that can, again, be used for their whole district. I mean, there's just a plethora of things that we're able to access along with just that interacting amongst each other from district to district across the state, which is always a good thing.
We are always better together. So every time I can help someone else or ask questions of other districts and how you're doing things, you know, we benefit. So the bigger the network, the greater the support.
For sure.
Yeah. And you presented today here at OAGC. So can you give us just a quick recap on, you know, some highlights from that?
Sure. So we actually did a more teacher educator facing version of the spatial awareness piece from Parent Day, but put a little bit of the research behind it and just even talking about as a teacher when you're in your classroom, using even gestures when you're asking students to manipulate math. I mean, like even that small component makes a big return on what they remember, or even using stories behind the math, like difficult math problem that you're giving them. You give them a little like back end story, then they're so much more willing to access and then engage into that learning. So today was really that facing for educators, what you can do in any classroom for all kids, and then specifically for gifted learners, what this looks like. But the key that got me was Ann Flick's research that, you know, she kind of pulled all together, that 40% of our kiddos that go off as freshmen in public universities here in Ohio, they are declaring STEM as their majors and then drop out. So 40%. Yes. So clearly there's a disconnect in what we're teaching in schools and what life skills that they need for college or even, you know, beyond for engineering, you know, and mechanical pieces. So how can we boost that in our classrooms? And so today's presentation was really focused around that. And then Kathy Chenoweth and Ann Flick kind of had different pieces of it. But the part that I took away, because I learned from them a few years ago and have really implemented in it in more of a talent development way. And so before our students' whole grade test, our second grade teachers have some of these spatial, like Blockus, we have Kiva planks, you know, those types of things. So having students engage in those materials before they take their whole grade in view test, we use in view, but even COGAT, I mean, either one, before they take their whole grade test, that just allows them to access maybe some type of spatial learning that they haven't had before. And so if we're testing them on it, what access can we give them beforehand?
Right. And make it equitable.
Exactly. Yep.
Absolutely. Do you as a district do anything whole grade wise at any level where you are trying to implement more of the thinking skills and even more specifically the spatial thinking skills?
So we're big, so it's always hard to say like every classroom gets, you know, X, Y, or Z. So that's just a challenge. But the gifted intervention specialists at our elementary level have all of this background knowledge from like Ann and Kathy and like just learning about it together and then bringing it to Lakota. And so they have, and I actually stole a bunch of their stuff and brought it today for the teachers to be able to play with. So they use that as part of their pullout. So they have aspects of spatial reasoning in their pullouts for third, fourth, and fifth grade.
Good, good. And then tell us anything more you can about talent development, either from a large view perspective, like nationally, or even just what you have researched and believe in. Tell us more about that.
So I think, as always, our parents should be partners in the education, and anytime we can bring them in to support what's happening in the classroom, you know, we'll be more successful. And so I think that's the area for talent development that we lack the most in public education. So anytime we can engage our families. So the one piece that we've been doing for the last 2 years is our parent nights that we have. Obviously there needs to be some dissemination of information, like what are gifted programs, what does this look like at Lakota, but we turn it into a game night too. So we do a universal, just you know, 10 or 20 minutes, just what they need that they can't maybe find on the internet, and just kind of give that information. And then we farm them out into classrooms where they go bounce around between, and they use these spatial reasoning games with our GISs in those rooms, just teaching them how to use it and what it looks like. And so while the kids are playing, we're having these side conversations with families about what you can do at home, what does this look like. We even have, it's called the Wonder Bus. So it's really cool. It's a bus. It has a lot of these pieces on it. It has some Legos, some magnet tiles. And so our parent engagement coordinator will line that bus up. We'll get it outside. It has lights. And so that even pulls some people in that maybe wouldn't have attended because they're like, oh, yeah, hey, there's the fun bus, right? And so
it's like the book bus.
I know, yeah. It's like I want to see it.
And so we try to engage families in some of this work, too, because we know that it's really difficult to say every student's engaging. But if we can have our parents be a part of that process, we know that more students will access and be more successful. Okay. So
that's a great approach. Oh my goodness. We do something similar in our grade level, and then a couple other grade levels have done it here and there. But with our gifted program in third grade, we have game nights, and it is so much fun. We even go to the next step of inviting our rep from Discovery Toys and Usborne Books so that they can even purchase those items if they want. But it is an opportunity for the parents to come in, enjoy games, really model that like time that we want to intentionally set aside to play those games, to actually have the touch and the tactile of like playing cards and interacting with cards, and more of like the 3D game versus the 2D game of video games or things that are just more like isolated and by themselves. And then they get to, you know, have that great memory with their families, but then they also have their friends and their classmates. And then, like you said, those side conversations can happen. And just the, even the popularity of certain games, you know, the catch on of like, ooh, are you buying that game? I'm buying this game, and all of that. So it's just a win-win all around. And we just have enjoyed it. It's a great way to just casually get to know our families and make it feel more comfortable. And they just love it. We love it.
Yeah. So for families that maybe not have the best relationship with schools, or maybe don't, you know, are new to this area or country. And so, you know, how do you bridge that for some families? It's a great way that's non-threatening and inviting to have them come in. But I will tell you, one of the kind of periphery advantages to this is the SEL component, because I know our gifted kids are not good at losing. And so
it's a whole nother element.
Like, so there's this very layered, wonderful approach happening when we're doing these games too. So
for
it's, you know, the learning, but it's also the other part of learning that's really key. Of like, how do you keep it together when you get really frustrated or when you're mad you lose? So I think that those are also benefits that, you know, we don't even identify when we're talking about having these engaging evenings. It's also really good when we line them up before Christmas, really, because, you know, what do we want for Christmas lists and things? I didn't do that well this year. We're doing ours in the spring, but it is one of those helpful, like, instead of buying those video games, like, let's buy Genius Square and then you know, do it as a family. So it's, you know, not on screens and actually connecting with each other.
Oh my gosh. And we keep telling my own children, we have three teenagers and at home, and we're like, this is a skill you're going to need in college. You're going to need to know how to shuffle cards. You're going to need to know card etiquette. So learn it now with us. But it really is a big deal of a life skill that they really need to have, that SEL piece you were mentioning. So good stuff. Well, thanks, Lauren.
Yes, thank you.
Got Catrice Kitte here with us, and we want to know more about you, Catrice, and your background and what you've been up to lately. Would you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. Thank you so much for having me. So I, for the past year, have been a part of the Dynamic ThinkWell team, really working to close the critical thinking gap and make sure that all students have access to critical thinking, regardless of background, experience, zip code, any of those demographic factors. Prior to joining the ThinkWell team, career educator, Taught first, second, and third grade, and spent an extensive amount of time supporting educators around DEI and really thinking about what equity looks like in the classroom from a standpoint of supporting all students.
Awesome. So you are here at OAGC and you are presenting a couple times, and you even presented at the Family and Community Day. So can you give us like a little bit of an overview or snapshot of some of your most important points?
Yeah, I certainly can. So it's been a fun ride to return back to Gifted. It's been a while. I've been somewhat adjacent or disconnected, but that doesn't mean that I don't always think about my Gifted folks in the back of my mind. So I started on Sunday, we had a parent session, parent and family session, which that was really fun. It's always nice to really think about as an essential stakeholder in children's lives, how do we ensure that they infuse the type of learning and thinking that we want to see in the classroom? How do they reinforce what we're doing in school? So that was nice. Also, as a parent myself, it's nice for me to be able to speak from personal experience and what these experiences look like in our own household. And then I just got finished with a really dynamic session. We had so much fun. I wish that we would have had double the amount of time. But we walked through some real-life legal cases and really talked about how do we discuss controversy without becoming the controversy, really setting the conditions in the container for thinking and learning to occur in a classroom when they are potentially controversial topics.
So tell us, because I sat in on it, and I agree, it was really well done, Catrice. Great job. And I think what was very interesting for me with the lens of a gen ed slash gifted teacher, thinking about how can I take what you were saying and put it right back into the classroom. The thing that you started like the lesson was called a think starter. So you started that off. And is that something that's available in the portal with the subscription to Think Law?
Yes. So all
tell us about it.
Yes. All of our lessons start with a think starter, a really quick hook, engaging way for students to jump right into the learning. And what I love so much about our think starters is it gives multiple entry points for all kids to access. So they bring their knowledge, their experiences, their background, their schema to be able to enter into this conversation about this real thing that we're talking about. The one that we used today was about rounding of clock times and whether or not you should be paid more or less, or whether or not it should even be allowed to round clock times.
What I found super approachable with that is your think starter actually was very informal and it felt easy to engage in. It didn't feel like, boom, big case situation scenario. It was actually more of a dog sitting scenario that literally anyone could relate to, no matter what age, no matter what zip code. It was comfortable to just engage in that conversation.
Absolutely. And that's what we're really big on at Think Law. Like, how do we make it accessible? Mm-hmm. How do we remove as many barriers for kids to access high quality tier one instruction? And that's what we do.
So then you took that and then led us to,
we talked about ways in which you can structure your classroom so that productive disagreement can occur, and foundational to a part of discussing controversy is in ensuring that we teach kids to listen authentically and listen to completion and listen for understanding is essential. We need that as adults.
Mm-hmm. Especially nowadays.
Yeah, for sure.
And so since I wasn't there, how would they respond? So after they're listening with intent, what would be a good response, even after listening, if they still disagree with their peer or the topic or whatever it may be?
So one of the tips that we use is that it's okay. It's okay to agree to disagree.
Right.
But being mindful that agreeing to disagree doesn't mean that you don't see the humanity in someone else. Making sure that you keep that essential. We all have mm-hmm. different experiences and backgrounds that help us to inform and see our worldview. And we also have to understand that all of those being unique experiences are going to shape the lens in which we see things through. But being open and willing to seeing someone else's perspective, not with the intent to have my mind change, but for me to consider someone else's perspective, helps me be a more rounded and well-versed human in how someone else might be viewing something.
And while you have all of these civil discourse like rules or suggested rules on the portal, right, in your lesson plans for these types of lessons. Mm-hmm. You also, at the end of your presentation, shared, you know, a picture of a traditional crossword puzzle that would have the words associated with like a seventh, eighth grade social studies lesson on like the First Amendment. Mm-hmm. So you've got that kind of traditional piece, and then you have the real life picture of students, maybe college students, protesting. And so you talked about that continuum and how it's important for us to move from that just 2D crossword, lower level, if you will, activity to this real, how do we get these kids to be really, truly engaged when they are at that appropriate age level to be active, civil, right advocates?
Yeah, so it's all about that active citizenship, and you have to set the conditions for that type of participatory learning to occur. So essentially, if you start with low level, you have low expectations, you're going to get that as a result of the type of task or activity that I'm mm-hmm. asking you to do. But if I ask you to engage at higher levels and to have a healthy debate and to look at everything through the lens of skepticism, or to really think critically and look at valid and reasonable evidence for or against, and then also understanding my argument as well as someone else's argument that might be the same or different than mine, then it helps us to get to this population where we have active citizenship. We can agree, we can disagree, and we can have healthy conversations about what that means.
And have evidence to support this.
100% sides. Evidence. Right.
Having so while evidence. We want to talk more, tell us and our listeners how to access this. How would we, if we're interested as an individual teacher or even approaching our district admins, how would we best get this resource?
Yeah, reach out to us. It's a very easy website. It's www.thinklaw.us. You can reach out and request a quote. We can connect and you can learn more. There's lots of information available on our website, and we love to show off what we do. It is really pretty dynamic.
Hi, my name is Rupa. And actually, my name is Rupa Narayanan, and everybody calls me Rupa. I am a gifted and talented instructional specialist. I go to 3 schools. This is my 3rd year being as a gifted and talented specialist. This is my 7th year in teaching. So I'm really excited. My father is identified gifted. I am an immigrant, but I'm not identified gifted, but I come with a whole bunch of creative ideas, and I'm a problem solver. That is who I would identify myself as. What I really like doing is I like to encourage higher order thinking and advocate for culturally, linguistically diverse students who come especially from low-income households. Mm. And it is unbelievable how much of untapped talent you have in those kind of schools. So I work in all Title I schools, okay. And I just love being a gifted and talented specialist. Last year, our district has a math showcase, which is a math competition. It's only for middle schools. So in that, I went to one of the schools. I worked with 4 boys, all of the 4 identified gifted, but all in different areas. One kid was identified superior cog, math, math and creative. So, but culturally, linguistically diverse. I had one kid who was Somali, one Hispanic, one Black, and one white. All the 4, I just spent 1 day a week for 6 to 8 weeks. Just worked with them on mental math, logical thinking, We had a math relay and problem solving. Just that one day I would go work with them, and lo and behold, when the competition took place in the entire middle school, these kids, they won second place.
Oh my gosh.
In the math competition.
Wow.
And the school had never won a trophy for a math competition.
Wow.
Woohoo.
So, oh, that's wonderful. Congratulations.
Yes. So it was such a wonderful experience. And after that was done, when I go to that school, every teacher in that building knows me. And if I go and I pull out the kids, like, they're like, okay, Miss Rupa, which kid do you need? There you go. So I guess it all comes down to how you build trust.
Mm-hmm.
Building trust and relationships with the classroom teachers is so, so very important, especially when you are a traveling GIS.
Mm-hmm. My name's Ben Bache, and I am the manager, founder, content creator of sort of everything of the PBL project. And a quick rundown of how it got started. About 10 years ago, the term PBLs, for whatever reason, was being used a lot. It's older than 10 years ago, older than 10 years. But during that time, people were just saying, oh, PBLs is, that's what everyone needs to be doing. And sort of like other terms that come and go, people use it a lot. And you're like, I'm not even sure what that means. And one that comes to mind is like college and career ready. It was being thrown around all of the time. And, you know, you rarely stop and think, well, what's that really mean? But with PBLs at the time, that's when it started, kind of researched it, talked to people and came up, okay, this is what a PBL scenario is, and came up with my simple format for it. And I started sending them out. I'd create one based on current events and send it out for free. And it sort of took off. And then I created more that were sort of based on content like Civil War, Forces in Motion, and teachers would pay for those. So it worked out well. I was able to do the free stuff, and I had enough teachers that were willing to pay that I could keep it going. And then I just sort of added to that over the years that instead of just PBLs, you know, quick critical and creative thinking exercises or deductive reasoning tasks. And then it grew to like escape rooms and forensic scenes and Socratic circles. And I've finally been able to hire some help. And I realized that makes things a lot easier to have other people creating the content with you. So we're creating a lot more content, and hopefully we'll keep it going. Still called the PBL Project. PBL's the weekly warm-ups, the free ones still go out. You can email me if you want those. My email's Ben, B-E-N, at pblproject.com. And just say, put me on that free list, and I'll do that, and we'll go from there. But having fun, and hopefully it's something I can do for many more years.
I'm Ann Flick. I am a gifted instructional specialist in Cincinnati, and I'm also an adjunct professor at Xavier University, where I teach graduate courses in their gifted endorsement program.
And the presentation I did with Jill this morning was Taking Creativity to Task. We were featuring the British television comedy show called Taskmaster, which is hugely popular over in England, but it hasn't really taken off so much in the US, which I don't understand because you can watch it for free on YouTube. The only caution that I have to give you at the get-go is that it airs in Britain at 9 o'clock, where they have free rein with language. So we actually had to bleep at a couple points, but it's a show where 5 comedians spend the season doing what the Atlantic called deeply meaningless tasks that are prescribed by the taskmaster, who is Greg Davies, who is merciless. He is hilarious, but he just has no pity for anyone. So there are these odd tasks that they do independently over the course of a couple months, and then they come together in studio and watch clips of each other completing the tasks, and then Greg assigns points so that over the course of the season, they're all competing to win a golden head of Greg. So it's just the basic uselessness of all of it is part of the humor. But it's professional comedians almost every single time. They are up to season 16 now. So we feature just three clips. One that prompts gifted coordinators to do PD with their classroom teachers, general education teachers, to kind of see like the social needs of the gifted. And then another one that is creative problem solving. So kind of that kind of creativity that employers are looking for. Like, here's a situation, but you're under these constraints. Can you solve this? And the Atlantic kind of talks about how they get evaluated based on not what they do it, but how they do it. So that is my favorite clip of the whole show that I've seen so far. And then the last one that we did was more a straight artistic creativity, where it happened to be a musical task. And lo and behold, the producers didn't even know the musical skills that two of the competitors had. So what we found is, first of all, the show is so engaging that people are just rolling in the aisles, laughing hysterically. But the nice thing is you can go back and binge watch all, now they're into 16 seasons, about 10 episodes each season, about four tasks each episode. There's just so much that you can cull in terms of examples of, these are grown-up gifted kids, but they're perfect examples of gifted kids at work. So some of the tasks are team tasks that I think are just hilarious parodies of group projects. So that's a way to open the conversation with general education teachers about why do gifted kids struggle with group projects? And there are just perfect examples there, like, but with this humorous umbrella that it's under. But there are individual tasks too. And I'm just amazed at some of the solutions that they come up with. And the artistic tasks also tap into the creativity of, like, you would never believe that comedians can do such visual art and such musical art that, like, there was one of the contestants was literally tearing up at what he had done with his partner, the song that they had created. So, like, there are so many possibilities even for, like, the social emotional aspects of gifted kids. Like, you could do six different presentations easily with all of these clips on different aspects of the nature and needs of gifted kids. But it's also inspiring too, in terms of all these fun, kooky tasks and the thought of doing them with gifted kids. So some people want to pursue those with their students. So what's really nice is Taskmaster, starting in the winter, like right after the new year, is going to air Taskmaster Junior for ages 9 to 11. So that's going to be open up a whole gold mine of opportunities, not only for PD, but also for ideas of things that teachers can do with their gifted kids. There's also a Taskmaster book with examples of like 100 plus tasks. So it just is a lot of opportunity for anybody who wants to binge watch on YouTube Taskmaster. There are a lot of avenues to explore.
Hi, I'm Heather Cardine. I am the current OAGC president, and we have just wrapped up our 71st annual fall conference. It was fantastic, as it always is. We had a great parent day on Sunday. Fabulous for those of us that are parents or even just have children in our classrooms or know children. Monday was also fantastic with our keynoter, Colin Seal, and his Think Law project. Today we had Brian Housand for our keynoter, and he did four sessions today. Absolutely fabulous. Makes you think. He's a great presenter. One of my favorites. Just personable and funny, and it was just a great time. And I am a little sad that this is my last year as president, but I look forward to next year when I am on the conference committee and can continue to bring in great presenters and share them with all of the gifted parents and teachers and administration here in Ohio. I'm also looking forward to this year's Teacher Academy. It is virtual. It is February 26th and 27th. Always fantastic presenters from around the state and outside the state of Ohio giving information about gifted students. It's for really for everybody, parents, teachers, administrators. ODE is there usually. It's a great time to rejuvenate after the long winter and just kind of recharge your batteries in terms of gifted. And it's always just a fantastic time.
So OAGC is just one of my favorite conferences of all times. We look forward to it every year, and we were lucky to be able to attend it again this year for the 71st conference. And as you can tell, there's just so many good speakers, presenters, people with just incredible knowledge about gifted education.
And they're willing to share and give these amazing resources out there for parents, because there was an amazing parent information day, which some of our guests just talked about. Highly recommend if you have the opportunity next year. And then this amazing group of educators and coordinators all coming together, and we're just building off of each other. And it just makes you empowered to like continue this passion of gifted education and move forward.
Advocacy,
where we need to be. Yeah.
Working together. There's even gen ed teachers who attend. They're lucky enough to be sent by their districts, and they're just gathering more information and resources and tools to be able to meet the needs of those gifted kids identified in their regular gen ed classrooms. It's just all around a great conference, and it's just a great organization to be a part of. So if you aren't already a member, we strongly recommend going on to oagc.com. Check it out. You will be able to find the membership link right there. They have a lot of great resources, and we just want to keep promoting it because it is such a strong and it has such a long history in our state of Ohio, but also just in our nation. It's just been one of the longest standing gifted organizations that really provides so much for parents, teachers, and kids themselves.
And it also has a little spot on their website about advocacy. There's different advocacy topics you can follow, different policies that are coming out, and how laws change. So it's a great resource to kind of stay up in the upcoming, I don't know, legislation of gifted.
Yes. And if your district doesn't have a parent group specifically for gifted advocacy, check out this organization of OAGC for that reason. As you heard Lauren Webb from Lakota City Schools talk about their parent organization and how important it is to be a part of the legislation at a state level. It's so important for us to just be in the know and just to help fight for the rights of these gifted kids.
And I think one of my biggest takeaways in general as a teacher, as a, you know, gifted teacher, parent, that we need to allow our students to be creative. It feels like we are so focused on standards, but how can we incorporate these creativity skills in our academics and not let that fizzle in kids?
Yeah.
And how, you know, studies show how kids are so creative at a young age and it just disappears.
Because they unlearn it.
They unlearn it. They don't have experiences, and just ways to tie that into education and your academic standards is so important.
That's right. So follow OAGC on social media, check them out online, become a member. It's actually very inexpensive. It's a great organization, and get involved in any way you can to promote this gifted education that we love and need for our kids to thrive in living the gifted adventure.
And stay tuned next week because we have Colin Seal, who was one of the keynotes at OAGC, on an episode next week talking about critical thinking. We are so excited to hear from him.
See you then. Thanks for joining us for another episode of Adventures in Being Gifted. If you like our show, please give us a 5-star rating, write a review, and tell all your friends too.
And don't forget to follow us on Twitter @BeingGiftedPod. And join us again next time for more Adventures in Being Gifted.